All right, next talk is long-term effects of peanut cotton forage rotation on cotton yield and soil organic matter.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming today. I'm going to talk about kind of a summary story of adding these forage or perennial grasses to a peanut cotton rotation. And this is work I did while I was at Auburn University. I'm now at Texas A&M, and Dr. Audrey Gamble is continuing on this research, and we're going to finish up wrapping this. You'll see what I mean in a minute. So in the southeastern coastal plain, the traditional rotation, this is southern Alabama, southern Georgia, and northern Florida, is a peanut cotton rotation. The soils in this area are very sandy. They have very low nutrient water holding capacities. In fact, a lot of them are loamy sand, sandy loams. They're very erodible. They definitely have needs for nutrient and water pretty consistently. Luckily, there's a lot of rainfall in the area compared to where it is in Texas. There are pretty good adoption of conservation practices. Winter cover crops and strip tillage are fairly common in these types of rotation systems. Well, we wanted to figure out a way to improve that because the organic matter content is really low, and the organic matter is what we can do to improve the fertility and improve the water holding capacity of these soils. They always say, you know, you're a day or two away from a drought at any point. So if you don't have irrigation, it's really important. Even with irrigation, you know, sometimes the availability of getting that out there in a timely manner is not always good. So there's a lot of what's well known that grasses, especially perennial grasses, are very good at having large root biomasses. They contribute to organic matter. They tend to break any clay or hard pans, plow pans type of thing. They tend to break disease cycles, especially with things like nematodes, which are both important for both peanut and cotton. And so they tend to improve health. They're less prone to erosion and require fewer inputs. The bad news is that they're not as profitable to grow grasses as it is to grow peanut and cotton, as I suspect you realize. So the idea was to incorporate a couple of years of the grasses into the peanut cotton rotation to see if you can build that soil health up and make it actually as profitable, and using cattle as a way to boost the value of the grassland. So the rotation then that's being evaluated is peanut cotton, followed by 2 years of bahia, and then oat, rye, winter cover crops, and all of the system would be under strip tillage or no-till drill for the bahia. The site that we're looking at is southern Alabama, right here kind of on the border. There's actually another site very similar in Marianna, Florida. So I'm mostly going to talk about the headland data, though. And so this is our large system where we have cattle. It's about a little over 20 hectares. And then it was established in 2002. So 2017, this past year, is the end of four complete four-year rotation cycles. And in this system, it's under a half irrigation pivot. And in the system, there are six quadrants, and that includes all phases of the peanut cotton bahia rotation as well as the peanut cotton rotation. So you have we'll have yield for all of those four sets of four-year rotations. Grazing, in order to evaluate the effect of grazing, there are cattle exclusion cages that are GPS reference sites. So when the cattle are present in the bahia or in the winter cover, we did go ahead and exclude them. Sometimes they did not like to be excluded. So there we had a little problem with some energetic cattle, but in a couple of years, but they tore our fences down. But overall, we tried to maintain that. We did do some clipping in the bahia to see if it's really hard to compare non-grazed and grazed and try to keep the same sort of organic, but we did do a couple of clippings to assess biomass in those, and I'm not going to talk about that data, but we did look at that. I do want to say also, we did a little bit of change in management in 2009, 2010, and so I'm going to talk about mostly 2010 to the present, and then I'm going to go back at the end and mention something about the prior management, and you'll see why in a minute. So the idea behind these rotations were kind of set up because there's some producer benefits as well as environmental benefits that could really benefit this region. And the idea is that with using conservation practice and maximizing conservation, that you're reducing your cost of operation because you're reducing fuel, pesticides, fertilizer, and nutrient use efficiency, so you're reducing that fertilizer. You're also potentially improving your crop yield because you're improving your soil health and you're disrupting those disease and pest cycles that can limit your yield. Obviously, the environmental benefits then from the conservation practices would be, economic diversity with adding the cattle and row crop operation. The environmental benefits, I suspect you can imagine what those are. Hopefully we're reducing erosion, reducing chemical usage, reducing nutrient runoff, improving carbon sequestration, because these soils are usually lower than 0.5% on a heavy managed system. So carbon sequestration is, there should be a way to build that up a little bit at least, and improving nutrient recycling and this is probably the bigger one, which I'll mention a little bit more later, is reducing the crop water demand. So previous studies under these peanut cotton bahia-bahia rotations have found that there is generally greater root biomass for the row crop, greater infiltration rates, greater earthworm populations, reduced incidence of disease and pests, particularly stem rotten nematodes are the primary ones that they've seen. But overall, I tried to keep up with the different counts and stuff for the disease, and they're so low you almost feel silly taking the data on some of it. And then higher plant nitrogen, and this is unpublished data that I wish I had collected, but I did not. Somebody else did, and they haven't published it. But overall, PDL nitrogen, things like that, are considered to be higher in these systems. So we also did an economic study. I was part of this. I am not an economist. Please bear with me if you don't understand the economy, and I don't know if I can answer your questions exactly. But we did do a study looking at this rotation with cattle and irrigation and comparing it to the regional averages and stuff with peanut cotton with irrigation, peanut cotton without irrigation, and wheat, soybean, corn without irrigation. And this study was done from 2007 to 2012. And they found that peanut cotton without irrigation was the most profitable. And largely the reason was because of the risk associated with irrigation in this region. They do get quite a bit of irrigation. They get quite a bit of natural rainfall. And so the risk with the irrigation made it prohibitively expensive. Peanut cotton with irrigation and peanut cotton bahia-bahia was about the same. So that was something. The other thing is this model doesn't take account any long-term benefits, any soil health improvement, and this is a fairly narrow range of years that the data was collected from. I did want to mention that for the years I'm going to show data for, the average rainfall is around 650 millimeters a year, and for most of the time we were below that during that system, and we are trying to minimize irrigation water usage for these systems. So we are not trying to, overkill on the water. I'm going to go through these super fast because I think percent relative yield is an easier way to look at this data. But I do have yields, and somehow my statistic letters got deleted between my updated version that I uploaded today. So sorry about that. But I'm going to just, like I said, briefly just go. You can sort of look at these. You see some years it looks significant, some years it doesn't. But the relative yield is kind of, I think, more interesting. So I compared all of our four rotation systems to one of those systems, which was the peanut and cotton without grazing. So we considered that as the baseline, and that would be 100%. So any yields above that would be over 100%. And it turns out pretty much everything was over 100%. You see a few cotton yields and a couple of scenarios that are lower than 100%, but they're pretty close. And by the way, the other thing that didn't get updated here was SBR means peanut cotton bahia-bahia rotation. So to summarize this, the peanut average yield, whether you had grazing or not grazing, was about 40% higher on average from 2010 to 2016. And that's the other thing I think I forgot to mention, is that because I was hopeful about getting all the data from 2017, it just didn't quite get in, so I just went ahead and left all the 2017 data out of this. But I think the idea, from the last 7 years is kind of still interesting. So an average of 40% increased peanut yield, and it ranged from, about 111, 115 to 87 82, 87%. At no time did it ever go below the peanut cotton without grazing. If you just added grazing to that peanut cotton system, it's about 20%, it averaged about 26% higher from 8 to 47. So there is something with that grazing of that winter cover that did seem to benefit. So I thought that was kind of an interesting finding. Cotton was a little more variable, and I suspect it's because, you know, we're one year out from that Bahia, or maybe it's just not as affected by that Bahia overall, but we did see a little bit more of effect of grazing. So you see that 33% on average or 23% on average increase in cotton yield due to that grazing. The ranges, you know, did go around 100%, a little bit below 100% in a couple years, but it did go up to 93%. I mean, it's almost doubling your cotton yield in some years. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And interesting, I thought it was even more interesting that cotton yield that doubled was actually in one of the drier years. And so a lot of these higher yields that we're getting are actually in the drier yields. And since we are trying to minimize our irrigation, that's where we're starting to get these maximized, the organic matter and stuff is benefiting the crop production. Because I don't have 2017 data, it's really not as exciting. I also had some 2009 data, and it's really easy to tell you. Pretty much all the carbon increased between 2009 and 2012, because even in the peanut cotton rotation, and I think that's because of the conservation practices and the cover cropping. So it didn't really say much, so I took that graph out. But you can see about a doubling of the organic carbon at the surface here at the peanut cotton Bahia compared to the peanut cotton without grazing. We don't see as much with depth, although there's a little bit of difference here within the peanut cotton Bahia, and the peanut tends to be a little bit lower, and I'm sure that's because of the digging action of the peanuts that does tend to disrupt that carbon a little bit. We also did some mineralization study back in 2012, and the only reason I put this in here because I think it kind of shows kind of the cycling of carbon in the system. The carbon builds up in the Bahia, and then it decreases as it goes through peanut and cotton and back to Bahia. It starts building back up again. So that's kind of what we're seeing overall. So our overall conclusions for this is that in established rotation, in peanuts, we were seeing an average of 40% higher yields, regardless of whether grazing, and they were consistently more than 10% higher than the peanut cotton without grazing. The winter grazing even just benefited alone that peanut yield. And in cotton, we didn't see as much consistency. It was more volatile. And actually, grazing in a few years seemed to be a much bigger factor than grasses themselves, and it was significantly different in those years. Yields averaged about 33% with grazing and only about 19% without. And some years there was some lower yield in the cotton. Carbon, in general, these systems are improving carbon over time. I cannot wait till we have the 2017 data to show you because I think that'll really set the picture. We did some correlations between carbon and nitrogen. They were very highly correlated, and this is probably why we actually decreased in 2009. One of our management changes was to decrease the nitrogen from 90 pounds, which is the recommended rate, to 75 pounds per acre. So we decreased the nitrogen rate that's typical for the region. We also saw carbon cycling from Bahia was actually cycling a little bit more quicker, and that might mean that mineralization is from the Bahia is actually providing that carbon back to the system. We used isotopes to determine that, and it's in a published paper. So my comments here, and to kind of wrap up, is during the first 8 years of this study, the first two rotation cycles, one of the reasons I didn't show you all that data is because the yields were pretty inconsistent and difficult to evaluate. And a lot of this, I believe, is we did not have a good understanding of how to manage the system. And I think this is one of the challenges for these types of new rotation systems. Most people don't want to spend 8 years trying to figure it out. And a lot of funding things, they want to do 3 years max. It's hard to get these systems really worked out. And so I guess what I think is this data really shows that how if you give it the time, you can figure out the system and tweak it out to make it actually start working. The learning curve was significant. We figured out after 8 years that we were overwatering all of this Bahia stuff. And so all the carbon buildup was actually, the peanuts were actually in particular suffering from the higher water contents in the soil, and they actually wanted it a little bit drier. So we had to back off on the irrigation, and that's when we started seeing those differences start to pop up. I also feel like we need to redo this economic study because I think it included a couple of those years where we still were not managing that rotation very well. So we need to do it, you know, on the more recent stuff. So the second eight years, we're consistently seeing the higher yields of peanuts that we didn't see so much in the first 8 years. And so obviously we need to do that economic study. My big question is, this area already gets a lot of rainfall. So if we could get it to establish without any irrigation, that would be, to me, the goal, because you really shouldn't need a lot of irrigation when you get 650 millimeters during the growing season. That's a lot of water for just that growing season. You see people in Lubbock going, wow, that would be wonderful. And so, you know, but these are really sandy soils, so they are often within a drought. The other question that I have with this is, can this work in a semi-arid climate to reduce water usage, especially if you're using deficit irrigation? You could use that irrigation when you absolutely need it to keep that water available for the plants to grow, but all the organic matter and the buildup and the water holding capacity and the nutrient holding capacity, the nutrient cycling, could really reduce inputs and maybe on long term, when you really don't have that excess water to be able to put on the field, might actually benefit the system. So these are the things that I would like to work on in the future on these particular systems. But I thought that these 40% increase over time on that peanut was just quite remarkable. And even on the cotton yield, which is a year out from the system, 26% increase over time. The question is if the peanut cotton rotation without irrigation was the most economical viable solution, you know, how would that work when you change ecosystems, when you get to semi-arid, when you get to maybe dryland production? I think the economic status will change quite a bit, but we'll have to figure that out. So, anybody have any questions? Do we have time for questions?
I think we're over again.
I'm sorry.
Catch you after.
All right, thanks.
All right, let's thank our speaker.